This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Joining me, of course, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Naz. It's great to be back on the air with you. And we're back from our summer hiatus. And a lot going on in the world of sports. And it's certainly a thrill to be back. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capital, Toronto Maple Leaf, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Lou, how are you this morning?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. It's nice to see we got through a nice hot, sticky summer.
It's hard to believe summer's already over. Where'd the time go? We went off the air in the middle of June. Lots happened this summer, and we're heading into the fall. A lot of great stuff coming up in sports this fall. The Blue Jays are hot as a pistol right now, and they're certainly on a roll heading towards the playoffs. NCAA football is going on. The Bills are Super Bowl favorites. Certainly is going to help us recover, Naz, from last how they left off last season in Kansas City, having a lead with 13 seconds left in the game. I don't even want to get into that.
That's one number they don't want to hear in Buffalo.
13 seconds. I think there was a movie by that name. I don't remember. Anyways, let's not talk about. Let's see if we can forget about the past and concentrate on the Buffalo Bills. And on that note, coming up after the first break, who else but the voice of the Buffalo Bills, John Murphy, the Murph down from Western New York. It's always a thrill to chat with him and catch up on what's going on in Buffalo Bills land. And bottom half of the hour, Naz, isn't it hard to believe it's been 50 years? 50 years this month. Summit Series, Team Canada 72. Still remember, like it was yesterday where I was, when Foster screamed into his microphone, "Henderson has scored for Canada." Naskin, you do the best Foster imitations of anybody.
Henderson has scored for Canada.
Beautiful. There's nobody does a Foster imitation like Naz Marchese. Anyways, it was September 28th, 1972. That Memorial Day is coming up. Lot of tributes, a lot of things going on. There's a Summit Series 72. It's a documentary series on the CBC. It's running on Wednesday nights. It's a fabulous, fabulous retrospective on what happened in September of 1972. We have coming on the show one of the co-directors, one of the co-producers of that show, Ravi Baishwal, who actually does some work down at a broadcaster down in WABC in Chicago, but he's a Canadian. He's a co-director, co-producer, responsible for the fourth part of that series. It runs every Wednesday night. Saw the first episode. Truly fantastic. Truly brought back some incredible memories. It's done in an interesting way. We'll chat with Ravi just after the second break, and might be a good opportunity to say next Sunday, Sean Mitten, Paul Patsku. Paul's a good friend of the show. They've just written a book on nobody better in the archivist and NHL history and hockey history to put footage together than Paul Patsku. And he's written a great book, and we'll have him on next Sunday. Gentlemen, a lot going on in the world of sports. We're going to talk Bills with John Murphy. Why don't we get into the Jays, guys? Naz? You know, they got a new manager during the middle of the season.
What a difference a day makes with him.
Yeah, John Schneider. Since he's been the manager, the Jays have gone on a little bit of a roll. Their percentage is .632. Since he's been the manager, they're on 102 game pace, winning pace for the season. When Montoya was there, it was only 84 games. They're the first wild card, And they've got a target on the back of the New York Yankees. We're only 4.5 games back from the Yankees, and that certainly would be a worthwhile endeavor to see if we can catch the Yankees. Naz, you're bring us up to speed. You're our big Blue Jays guy. Your impressions of the last couple of months, and what can we expect to see from here on in, Jays-wise?
It's incredible that they were 17 games behind just before the All-Star break, and now they're 4.5 behind. And I think if they get to 2 for next week, it'll be a big series coming up on the September 26th to 28th. And the Yankees better look out because the Jays are going to pass.
On that note, who better to turn it over to than Lou Franceschetti, who's our resident New York Yankee fan. I don't know how that ever happened, Lou, but I actually have to admit I was a New York Yankee fan as well before the Jays joined the league. I grew up with Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris and Yogi Berra and all those great Yankees. Who can forget watching Saturday afternoon baseball on, I think it was NBC, if I'm not mistaken. You know, it's a great Stollemeyer and all those great Yankees of the late 50s and early 60s. I'm a hardcore Blue Jays fan ever since the Blue Jays came in the league. But Lou, you didn't drink the Kool-Aid, did you?
No, I didn't, Wally. I don't change my allegiance. I sat in front of those same TVs you did, watching all those Yankee greats. And I stuck with them because they got the best uniform in baseball. They don't change. They don't have their names on their back. And they paid to bring the best players into the city to win. Even though I hate saying this, I think the Jays right now are on a roll. The Yankees have more or less, you hate to say it, maybe they have choked up to this, you know, coming up right now. But at the end of the day,
yeah,
we do have a 4.5 game lead.
Yep.
So you guys are still looking up at us. And you still might have to go into the playoffs. So let's not talk about it until it's all over. Because I've had a tough summer talking to people that have really rubbed it in my face.
Well, I don't know.
The direction that the Jays have gone.
I don't know.
The Yankees have gone.
I don't know about rubbing in your face, Lou. The last time I checked the standings, the Yankees are still 4.5 games ahead. So,
well, you're right. But
Let's have a look at that. It's called reverting to the mean, is it not? I think the Jays were not playing to their capabilities, and the Yankees were probably playing a little bit over their heads. And now, you know, if they actually meet in the playoffs, that would be an interesting series. We'd have a lot of fun on our show going toe to toe, Lou. Mind you, with the way the playoffs, you guys figured out how they have a whole new playoff format this year. I can't figure out the algorithm. I guess when I have enough time, there's six teams in each league that are going to make it. The three division winners, three wild card teams. There's going to be none of that 163rd game this year. They're going to settle that all mathematically. You guys figured out this playoffs. What's going to happen, Naz?
Yeah, it's a three game series between the wild card teams and the one team that doesn't get a bye. From the other side,
which right now will probably be the Cleveland Guardians. I guess that's their name now. Got to be careful what I call them. The Cleveland Guardians will probably take up that third based on their record, and then there's three wild card teams that will be seeded. I think based on the record, not on their record, because right now the Jays would be the top wild card team based on their record. But if I understand this correctly, they don't get seeded based on their record. They get seeded based on how their record is between the three wildcard teams. Lou, you know anything about this?
Not really. I've always been told that exactly what you have said there. The Guardians are going to get the top spot. The Jays will get the second seed right now. Tampa will get third seed. And the fourth seed is probably going to be
Seattle. Right,
the Jays will get, So it'll be the three wild card teams are going to be the Jays and the Jays, Tampa,
and Seattle. Yeah,
Let's go Seattle.
Yeah, no. The three wildcard teams right now are Jays, Tampa, and Seattle in that order. But that's not necessarily the order from what I understand. We'd have to check the head-to-head record between the three of them, if I have this correctly. And as I'm sure as we get closer to the end of the season, this will sort of flush its way out. And then, of course, there's the three division winners that automatically get seeded. Right now, Houston's one, Yankees are two, and Guardians are three. So it is quite important for the Jays to, if they can somehow get into and overtake the Yankees, it certainly changes completely the playoff prospects, and they actually get a bye. They don't have to go into a wild card, and they automatically then go into, I presume, the five-game series after that. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks in baseball land. We're certainly thrilled that the Jays have turned it on. Bichette's been on fire beyond belief. They've got a new nickname for him, guys. They're calling him September Bo. Certainly we'll chat up Blue Jays baseball quite a bit in the next few weeks. On that note, there's a team about how far is Buffalo from Toronto? About 90 miles. They are an incredible performance against the Super Bowl champions in the Super Bowl champions' home stadium. Bills are Super Bowl favorites, according to the betting odds. And who better to chat with Buffalo Bills than the voice of the Buffalo Bills, John Murphy. We'll go to break, and we'll be right back with John.
No hard prices.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville decided to do what it could to stop world prices from spiralling out of control. With a large pickup special, get a large one-topping pizza for only $11.99. $11.99 for a large pizza?
Long live Pizzaville!
Call Pizzaville for the large pickup special at 736-3636.
Rayo's got big nose!
Or online at pizzaville.ca.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery, now open at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
To become a champion in business, it takes coaching, training, and bench strength. And every team needs a skilled player like KPMG Enterprise for private companies. KPMG Enterprise helps entrepreneurs and family businesses grow, strengthen, and transition by offering a full suite of services, including audit, accounting, tax, and advisory. Your business doesn't stand still. It evolves. Team up with a winner. Visit kpmg.ca/enterprise. Let's do this.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in Toronto, 96.7 FM, and we video and audio stream on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. The Bills are on fire. They are Super Bowl favorites, according to the betting odds. And who better to have with us this morning joining us from Western New York, the voice of the Buffalo Bills, the one and only John Murphy. John, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in Orchard Park.
It certainly is, and it's been a great start to the season, John. The expectations are super, super high for the Buffalo Bills. We was just chatting with my co-host, Naz, and our guest, Lou Franceschetti, earlier. We have that performance last week against the LA Rams has gone a long way to exorcising the demons from the last game against Kansas City. We don't even want to talk about that anymore. John, I can't remember this much excitement going into a Buffalo Bills season for a long, long, long time. Bring us up to speed. What's the buzz down in Western New York?
Yeah, there's a lot of buzz, and you're right about the excitement level. It's interesting because, you know, I was around. You guys remember the Super Bowl era 30-some years ago.
Sure do.
Going to four consecutive Super Bowls. And people will ask me a lot, was it like this then? And, you know, it's different now. I mean, there's so much more intense coverage of the NFL now than there was 30 years ago, even when the Bills are going to the Super Bowl. There seems to be so many more Bills fans and people just crazy about the Bills than there were 30 years ago. I don't discount what that team did in the early 90s. Again, four straight AFC championships, four straight Super Bowls. They certainly accomplished more than this current edition of the Bills has so far. But this team's got more people excited. There's no question about that. People are really pumped about the home opener tomorrow night and about the way this season began.
I'll turn it over to my co-host, Naz Marchese. Naz.
How important was the signing of Von Miller, John?
Oh, it was key. I mean, for a number of reasons. Number one, most importantly, is on the field. You know, the Bills, interestingly enough, were the number one defense in the NFL last year in terms of yards allowed per game. Number one in the league. I mean, where do you go from there, right? It'd be easy to sit back and say, well, got the NFL's best defense. We don't have to worry about it. But the Bills took a deep dive into their shortcomings after last season and decided that they needed a better pass rush. You know, they needed a better play up front. They had a couple of games where they were just trampled by the Colts, by the Tennessee Titans last year. They needed to beef up their defensive line. And so Von Miller became a free agent, and they bit the bullet and spent a ton of money and signed him. A couple of things beyond that, beyond his ability to play, and he can play apparently at age 33. The message that I think it sent to the rest of the roster was, this is it. This is our shot at the Super Bowl, right? And the message was clear. We're taking our shot this year. And that's important. I think an important message to deliver to the players. And also, since he's been here and, you know, really not a whole lot of work during the spring camps, but once they got the training camp in July, since he's been here, Von Miller has become a real leader on the defensive side of the ball. I was talking to Sean McDermott, the Bills coach, Friday, I guess it was, a couple of days ago, about the Bills' second-year player, Greg Russo, a pretty good defensive end who was a first-round draft pick. And he told me about the work that Von Miller has done with Greg Russo, how they sit next to each other at team meetings and at positional meetings. And Von Miller has sort of taken him under his wing and become a mentor to Greg Russo. And I think that's a benefit the Bills didn't expect to get from a veteran like that. They didn't know quite, frankly, what they were going to get. So for all these reasons, he's been critical. He had a really good opener against the Rams. I think the Bills wisely are, you know, they have an 8-man defensive line rotation so that Von Miller won't have to play all that much. I think he played 35 or 40% of the snaps against the Rams last week. So I think the Bills are off to a good start with Von Miller, and he certainly is off to a good start with them.
John, I'm going to throw you at a former Buffalo Sabre here, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Lou. Yeah. Go ahead, Lou.
Morning, John. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Thanks, Lou.
Yeah, obviously this is going to have a little bit of a twist. And it's still early in the season. How's the offense adapted to a new offensive coordinator since the one they had last year has gone on to greener pastures with the New York Giants? And signing Von Miller was pretty much a big deal, because he was a leader of Denver, and then obviously you saw what he more or less was one of the final pieces of the puzzle with the LA Rams. How's he adjusted to more or less living in Buffalo and being part of the Buffalo Mafia?
Yeah, I think, let me start with your second point first. I think Von Miller has adjusted quite well to being here in Buffalo. You know, I mean, it's interesting, and I've noticed this over the last 4 or 5 years since the Bills have been pretty good. The complaints, if there were some earlier about, you know, the slower lifestyle in Buffalo, the weather, which is, you know, which is certainly real, they sort of lessen when the team gets good, you know, when the team is successful, as the Bills have been for 5 years now. People don't mind the weather as much, including players. They don't mind, the slower lifestyle and the fact that this isn't Hollywood. He isn't even Denver, Colorado. So I think Von Miller has adapted to that very well. He kind of likes it here, I think, and loves playing. I mean, he's going to get a taste, really, his first taste tomorrow of that fan base and what that place sounds like, Highmark Stadium, what it'll sound like tomorrow when, he plays in his first regular season home game. And that's going to be important, I think. I think he'll get a feel for what people talk about when they talk about the passion of Buffalo Bills fans. To your first point, I mean, there's only one game of evidence, Lou. I mean, it is this early in the season. But Ken Dorsey, the new offensive coordinator, who is not brought in, I mean, he'd been here for 4 years. It was a really good debut, I think, last game against the Rams. They had a good mix offensively. Things are going well. I mean, you can do that when you got as many talented players as the Bills have. But, there seemed to be even no mechanical foul-ups, no technical problems. The play calling was smooth. There were no issues with communication that were evident to us, outside the game. So that's a good first step for Ken Dorsey. He's not a neophyte. He's been around for years. He's been with the Bills for 4 years. And he knows Josh Allen, which is probably the key element. But, it was different. It will be different. Brian Daboll had a knack, and he started out well with the Giants as their new head coach. But, he's off to a good start. I'll say that. Ken Dorsey got off to a really good, impressive first game.
We're talking to John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills. John, I don't think you can talk about the Buffalo Bills these days without bringing Josh Allen into the conversation. I mean, going back a few years, the year he was drafted was we look back, and that was the quarterback class. There were I think he was fourth or fifth out of the quarterbacks that were drafted that year. I think that was the Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. But
Josh was the third one picked.
So he's certainly and I don't recall if the Bills traded up to draft him. If they did, I mean, certainly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, somebody saw something, and as you said, he's gotten better and better every year, and now he's one of the marquee players, if not the marquee player in the whole NFL. I'm trying to compare him to anybody, quarterbacks from the past, in terms of his physical package. The only one that comes to mind is John Elway. I mean, Josh Allen can do everything. He can throw, he can run, and he's matured. Is there some concern that maybe he's running too much and that exposes him to injury? Is there any discussion about that at all, John?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion in the media about that, quite frankly. And I think the Bills have got it under control. He ran 10 times against the Rams last week, 9 of them in the second half. They haven't said it, but I have a feeling they saw something from the Rams defense and said, we can exploit Josh and his ability to run the ball a little bit better, and let's do this in the second half. Look, he's a weapon on offense. He's a real bona fide weapon for the Buffalo offense. It'd be crazy to just shut that down, even with the knowledge of the injury potential and the deference that you want to pay to his value to the team. But he's a weapon, and at age 26, he won't have this. They won't have this weapon forever. They won't have it really much longer in Josh's tenure. There's going to come a point when they're really going to want to slow it down as far as letting him run the ball. But right now, it's a big part of the Buffalo offense. In the draft process last spring, going into the draft in late April, a lot of Bills fans were thinking, well, they need a short yardage running back. They need a power running back. And I thought to myself, well, the short yardage running back is Josh Allen. I mean, he's that good. He does more than most running backs will do in short yardage and when you really need a yard or two. There's concern. Obviously, nobody wants to see him hurt, but I do think the Bills value him as a weapon, and they want to make sure they continue to use his ability to run the ball and his physical nature. And I think they'll continue to do that, actually.
Just a couple more minutes, John, then we'll let you go. Naz, I'll turn it back to you.
John, I was checking this morning. 90% of their roster is homegrown, drafted players by the Buffalo Bills. How important was that?
Yeah, it's important. When Sean McDermott got here in 2017, and then Brandon Bean soon followed, they talked a lot about culture and changing the culture. And quite frankly, they were kind of snickered at, laughed at by some elements of the media and even some fans. Like, well, don't worry about culture. Just get good players and win. But you know what? They were right. They needed a certain kind of player. to play here in Buffalo, to handle the weather, to handle the small town nature of life in Buffalo, and to thrive on winning. And I think they identified who those players were in the draft, some of them, and went out and got them, guys who would fit in well. And there's no better example than Josh Allen, a guy from a small town in Northern California who apparently likes living here and is committed to playing here for, you know, mostly the rest of his career, one would think. So that's part of it. You know, I think, you know, the Bills have drafted well in terms of talent, but they've also got the right kind of player and built a culture that that encourages people to focus on winning and not to get caught up in, you know, TV commercials and that sort of thing. All that stuff will come if they continue to have success. But most of it is about loving the game of football. And that's a big element to Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. You know, does this guy love football? Does he love to play? I think they've really tried hard to bring those type of players in here.
We're talking to John Murphy. Last question before we let you go, John. Let's size up the game tomorrow night. It's at Highmark. It's the Tennessee Titans, who are certainly a rival for the Bills, and finishing first overall is obviously. I'll take it that way. How important is it for the Bills to finish first overall?
Yeah, it's important because you get home field, right, when you're a top seed in the AFC side of the playoffs. Last year, the Bills paid dearly for, you know, they lost in the last second in a game at Tennessee. And they, of course, lost to Pittsburgh early on in AFC loss. They lost at home to the Colts, and they didn't have a good enough record. They played at home in their first playoff game, but then they went on the road to Kansas City and came up short. So I think it's important for the Bills to get home field in the playoffs. And the Tennessee Titans and the Bills have been kind of eyeball. This is the fifth consecutive year they've played each other. And you know, over the last 5 years, and they both have had coaching changes, I was doing a little research. Last 5 years, the Titans have 50 wins, and the Bills have 49. And these two teams and the Chiefs have been really the class of the AFC for the last 5 years or so. So it's a familiar opponent and an opponent that knows the Bills well and vice versa, and it's a game the Bills need. You know, you don't want to start dropping games in the AFC like they did last year and never had a chance to get home field.
John, we want to thank you so much for taking your time for us on a Sunday morning. You've been a good friend of our show. We are unabashedly Buffalo Bills fans. We don't hide that. We're homers. We are looking for a great season from the Buffalo Bills. We haven't been, as we said before, this excited probably since the early 90s. So we wish the Bills nothing but the best this year. And let's stay in touch this year, John. We're thinking good things this year, John.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, fellas. Great to talk to you again. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. The voice of the Buffalo Bills, John Murphy. Before we go to break, I have a public service announcement. Nazanwali Sports Hour always takes the opportunity when we can to support some really, really great programs in the community. And there's one program that's near and dear, especially to my co-host, Naz Marchese. It's the World Parkinson's Program. They have a special event this week at Pheasant Run, September 21st, Wednesday. It's a golf tournament, lunch, and continental breakfast. Support this program. You can find them at www.pdprogram.org. It's the World Parkinson's Program. It means the world to my co-host, Naz Marchese, and if it means the world to my co-host, Naz Marchese, it means the world to me. The World Parkinson's Program, www.pdprogram.org. When we come back from break, 50 years ago this month, Canada-Russia. For those of us who lived through it, who can forget it? We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville announced that vegetarian pizzas are better for the environment. They use fewer resources than pizzas with meat, and you get less gas emissions. Try our margarita, spinach and artichoke, Greek, spicy potato, or super hot veggie pizzas. To save even more energy, you could always eat them in the dark. Call Pizzaville for the eco-friendly pizzas at 736-3636.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition
If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery, now open at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
To become a champion in business, it takes coaching, training, and bench strength. And every team needs a skilled player like KPMG Enterprise for private companies. KPMG Enterprise helps entrepreneurs and family businesses grow, strengthen, and transition by offering a full suite of services, including audit, accounting, tax, and advisory. Your business doesn't stand still. It evolves. Team up with a winner. Visit kpmg.ca/enterprise. Let's do this.
Last minute of play in the game.
Unlike sports, the outcome of palliative care isn't determined in the dying seconds. Physically, socially, and spiritually, palliative care is giving someone the best quality of life for however long life remains, while supporting their loved ones. All services are free of charge with partial government funding. The need for palliative care is great. Making an impact. Hospice Vaughan, Mario and Nick Cordellucci Hospice Palliative Care Center of Excellence. A truly amazing 10-bed residence. The first palliative care hub in Vaughan. If you share the belief that everyone deserves to live until they die, get involved. Volunteer your time or donate to hospicevaughan.com. We are for community, by community. And together, we are here to serve.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 Radio in Toronto, 96.7 FM. Also, we live video and audio stream on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour Ravi Baishwal. Ravi is the co-director, co-producer of this fabulous new four-part documentary on the CBC. It's called Summit 72. It really brings back some incredible memories of that amazing, amazing series, Canada-Russia or Canada-Soviet Union, however you want to describe it, back in 1972. I lived through it. My co-host Naz Marchese lived through it. Our guest this morning, Lou Franceschetti, lived through it. And Ravi, welcome to the show.
Hey, it is great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I watched the first episode Wednesday night on the CBC. Transfixed. Ravi, I'd first, if you can just sort of give us a synopsis for our listeners this morning. Tell us all about the documentary, how it came to be, and what you were trying to accomplish.
Well, I think that, you know, this is such an incredibly iconic story for Canadians and remains so 50 years ago. And everybody likes an anniversary. Everybody likes a round number. And the players knew that they were going to be asked a lot of the questions that they've been asked before and asked to participate in many documentaries to celebrate this 50th anniversary and to really understand what happened back then and how the changes unleashed in hockey and, frankly, in society at that time have led us in many ways to where we are today. So we try to look at it through a modern lens. And so what happened was the players, led particularly by Ken Dryden, the goaltender, and reached out to our lead producer, Nick DePontier, and of Mercury Films, he and Jennifer Baishwal, who, yes, is indeed my cousin, and the executive producer of the great environmental films person. They were asked, look, we'll give you exclusive rights to talking to the players who remain with us now, because we only want to do one documentary, and you're the right guys to do it. They have relationships from previous documentaries on environmental issues and so on. And so Ken Dryden went to Nick and said, let's do it. And then Nick said to me, nobody knows the story better than you, and you're a storyteller and you're a journalist, so I want you to join me as a writer and director. And so he, in fact, asked me to take a leave of absence from my job. I'm actually I'm a Canadian, a proud Canadian. As everyone knows, I was with CTV, and before that, I started with the CBC. But I work for ABC News now in Chicago. I'm actually the anchor of the news in Chicago. And he said, can you take a leave of absence and join me on this journey? I'm like, well, probably not, but I sure as hell can dedicate every minute of my time that is outside of my job to doing it. And we made it work, along with Dave Bedini and Robert McCaskill. So it takes you through the story. It tells it through a modern lens. It brings in new voices. You hear from all the old, as many of the old players as we could find, including the Soviet players. And I think people are really going to go on a journey here and see the story anew. We all know what happened, but how did we get there? And what was the emotional ride? And how did the changes come that changed hockey? It's all there.
I'll turn it over to my co-host, Naz Marchese. Naz, go ahead.
How did you get the footage to look so up-to-date? It was amazing how it was perceived that night.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That's the greatest part about it. So what we did is we basically went to the Hockey Hall of Fame. And the Hockey Hall of Fame, like when you go there in downtown Toronto, it's amazing, right? But what's really incredible for a total hockey nut is the archival stuff that they have behind closed doors that's not out there on display, including dozens and dozens of cans of old film, 16-millimeter gorgeous film of these games. There are actually only two original copies in film of all the games. And so we found them in the cans, using the old film cans, and you open them up and they smell like vinegar and the whole bit. And so through amazing modern filmmaking techniques, we've restored that 16 millimeter to 4K, which means like the resolution is super high, but it still looks like that beautiful film. And then we had this, one of the most gargantuan challenges here was trying to select what we needed and what would tell the story, and to be in and out of the hockey to tell sort of the cultural side of this entire story, and to do it with this marvelous resource that we had. And that was really quite a challenge.
Lou, I'm going to ask you to chime in now. Where were you in 72, Lou? How old were you?
I was 14 years old. I think, I was either in the cafeteria of my high school, or probably they gave us a day home and gave us a chance to go home and watch it.
And certainly, turning it back to Ravi, that was, I think the statistics show that 90% of Canadians were watching that game. I think our total population at the time was 22 million, and amount of money.
Right on the numbers. I mean, imagine this. My mom, we're immigrant family, and I kind of tell the story on an essay I wrote about the documentary and what 72 meant to me. Is, you know, I was born and raised in Canada, but, you know, immigrant kid in the 70s, the world was changing. We were all trying to figure it out. I just saw this amazing game of hockey. I wanted to be a part of it. We obviously didn't have a tradition of it in our family, but I remember my mom telling me, because they brought the TVs into school. I was in grade two, so I was seven at the time for game eight. They brought the TVs in. And I remember going home that afternoon and saying to my mom, you'll never guess, we were allowed to watch TV at school, and Canada won this incredible hockey game. This is amazing. And she says to me, yeah, I watched it as well. Imagine my young 34-year-old mother at the time, she's now 84 and still with us, an amazing Canadian pioneer, but she's at home, all the kids are at school, and she's only been in the country for, well, a few years at that point, but still, she's relatively new to the country, and she would never watch a hockey game. And there she was watching it on a Tuesday afternoon. That's how much it gripped everybody, no matter where you're from or what your background was.
Ravi, I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question, which sort of just comes flow segues from what you just discussed. I lived through it. I was 16 years old at the time. Naz was 16. Lou was 14, I guess, and you were 7. We lived through it. There's a lot of the younger generation that really know nothing about this series. Mm-hmm. No context, no nothing. But then I'll ask the rhetorical question. Why do we need to do this? Wasn't it just a hockey game, or wasn't it just a hockey series? I know the answer to that question, but I want to hear mm-hmm. your words.
You're teeing it up here big time. But I think, honestly, it's because it was the first time. It was the first time that the best of the best got to play against the best of the best. And we didn't even know the other team. There were barely any scouting reports. Can you imagine? They barely knew the names of the other players. Oh, he's a big guy. He's a good defenseman. Oh, this guy can shoot, but that's about it. They thought the goaltending was really bad. We didn't know. And those Soviet teams were constantly winning world championships, Olympic championships, calling themselves the world champions. Well, wait a second. We're Canadian. We invented the game. We're the best. Look at Phil Esposito, Bobby Orr, Gordie Howe, and all these iconic players. They're the best, and they don't get to play in those world tournaments and Olympics and so on because they're quote-unquote professionals, and supposedly the others aren't. So it was a long time coming at a very high level in terms of government to be able to arrange for this entire story. And we get into all of that without sliding into excessive amounts of politics and sociology, but it's all there. And the culture and the times as to why two countries needed to kind of talk to each other in the height of the Cold War. Remember, this is happening at the height of the Cold War. And so this was used as a way for, you know, the countries to understand each other a little bit better. Canada, as you say, small country, even smaller, not really a presence on the world stage other than a helpful ally to the United States and Great Britain. But that's about it. But this was our thing. And so we had to step up and show ourselves to be the world-class players that we were, and as such a reflection of the world-class country we are, and that the, you know, best system of government in fact exists within us. And so that's why instantly this hockey series became a proxy war in the Cold War for a referendum on whose system is better. And the Soviets, the communists back then, were actually super, super competitive economically and obviously in the space race and intellectually and culturally and so on. So this very quickly became a proxy battle for that. And that's why the players say, wow, I never understood that. But they were, to a person, they say it was the greatest thing that they were ever involved in because it just meant so much. So that's why it's important for anyone in Canada and, frankly, around the world to know this story.
We're talking to Ravi Beshwal. I hope I got that pronunciation correct.
You got it.
Thank you. thank you for correcting me when I mispronounced it the other day when we were chatting.
Oh, Ravi. Just remember that. It's always so easy.
Ravi, you're a co-director, co-producer, certainly significant role in a four-part documentary, Summit 72. It airs on CBC Wednesday nights. The first episode was this Wednesday. The second episode will be next Wednesday. I highly encourage our listeners to watch. It's incredibly well done. Ravi, I'm not letting you go because I'm going through all of that. I'm just leading it up and going to take the opportunity to turn it back to my co-host, Naz Markazi.
How important was Carl Subban in the interview the other night?
He was incredibly important. What a perspective. When you start to hear what he has to say about what hockey did for him, it's a significant set of stories for Canadians to understand integration and immigration and creating a new identity in a new country that's offering you opportunities, but you don't know which way to start. And of course, we all know he's the father of three professional hockey players, and hockey played an enormous role in their integration into the country. And Carl says this story so well, but as much as that's the story, Carl is a well-known educator and leader in the frankly in the Toronto education community. He was a principal for 30 years, and he just actually recently retired, and now kind of works as a consultant with a big leadership academy that you'll see in the movie. At any rate, it's just his voice, his perspective, obviously his credibility as a guy who used hockey to help his kids become, frankly, more Canadian in one sense, is a really great origin story. And I think it stands in for what a lot of people have experienced in the country, wherever they are, whether it's the Toronto area or the West or what have you, that this was, it also explains the time and place that we were coming into in 1972 and what it would have been like for a guy like him. He was 14 as well at the time, and he was in Sudbury, of all places. I mean, Sudbury was full, a mining town full of people from all over the world because they needed the labor. And he, you know, and he decided that he wanted to be Ken Dryden. So he tells the story. And again, it's, you know, it's not just a love affair with hockey, although it is. But it, as there is in any love affair, there's always, you know, rough patches, and there are always situations of discovery and difficulty and challenge. And I'm using sort of vague terms like that to try to get you to imagine what it had been like for a young black kid from Jamaica to be, you know, growing up in Sudbury, and people are all of a sudden going nuts over something that they're watching about hockey. Well, I got to get into this, he's thinking. And so he becomes a great story. He shows up throughout the episodes, and you'll hear that from Farhan Lalji as well, from TSN, a reporter who has, I don't want to give too much away, but I'll give you one of his great lines. He said hockey was so important to him that his parents one birthday said, for his birthday, do you want a bicycle or do you want to sign up for hockey? And for any kid of color, that was the deal. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, sign me up for hockey, because that wasn't happening. And he got to play a little bit, and he's a fabulous sports reporter out in Vancouver now. So you hear that interview as well. But Carl Subban really is he really fills the screen, and his laugh is terrific. So he gives us a little bit of levity as well.
Lou, wanted to bring you in now. Questions, comments for Ravi?
Yeah, Ravi, I know Mr. Subban and I go way back when PJ was more or less playing in the GTHL, and I was involved in it right now. And he's got a pretty good job with Everett private schools. My son is actually working for him right now. And he kept on asking him lots of questions about how to handle, how he is handling being a son of a so-called ex-professional athlete. But anyways, being an ex-hockey player, there have got to be a lot of stories behind the scenes for the first time going over to Moscow and playing those four games over there. Which one did you find most intriguing or most unpredictable that you heard from any of the old guys that you talked to?
There's a fair bit of that, especially in episode three, which concentrates on the first three games in Russia. And the way the whole documentary is laid out very simply is four parts. The first part just played the other night. That's just about the lead up, and then game one. Next Wednesday, episode two, is the remaining three games in Canada and the downward turn of the fortunes of Team Canada and what happened. Episode three, in 2 weeks, that is the one about the first three games in Russia, games 5, 6, and 7, including going over, which is to your point. And episode four, which is I was the main director on four, is the final, the legacy, the Henderson goal. What's it all mean? And to answer your question, Phil Esposito. He's absolutely still the most compelling character. You know, Dryden is super eloquent and super erudite and helps us understand really big picture stuff. But Espo gives you that amazing color, talking about, you know, being spied upon or feeling like they were being spied upon when they were in the Soviet Union. Most of these guys hadn't been abroad back then. You know, Canadians themselves hadn't really traveled. And 3,000 Canadians got on airplanes and went for a trip to Moscow in the height of the Cold War. It was insane what actually they were able to pull off. And so Espo tells some great stories. I'll leave it to the documentary to tell what they are. But he's great that way. Bobby Clark is in our movie, and he talks a little bit about that. But being in that weird situation and feeling like you're being spied upon and knowing that the weight of the country is resting on your shoulders, when they got to the Soviet Union, really helped them actually finally find themselves as a team. And Lou, you would understand what it takes, how a team gels over time or doesn't. And that was that adversity that was critical to them really rallying and doing what they did in Russia in those final games. It was absolutely improbable. They were dead in the water, and the Russians were only getting better, but things changed. So yeah, and I will also tell you about Everest Academy. I'm glad you mentioned it by name. That's, you're going to see Everest Academy in the movie quite a bit. A lot of the kids who are skating and some of the young superstar kids who are playing there that are basically pupils of Carl Subban speak to us. We bring some of those modern voices into it, and I think there's a really nice, lovely touch between what that meant to them and what they think going forward. And these are just honest interviews that are kind of quick snippets of that, and are really fun and compelling and interesting to watch. Another guy to watch for is the fabulous Shane Wright, who I still can't believe that Seattle got him in the fourth pick. But anyway, Shane talks to us about it, and what he's 18 years old. He's grown up steeped in this because his dad talked to him about 72 all the time. So there's another wonderful hockey player who has worn the Maple Leaf, has been the captain of Team Canada Juniors and all the rest of that. So he understands that. So we get into some meditations about all of that.
Ravi, this is live radio, and so we have a hard stop coming up shortly. Yep. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. I'm going to throw two parts of this. One part you may not, I might have to interrupt you and get off the air. My first part is, you know, we always talk about this from the Canadian perspective, and I know I've been involved watching some of the material that Paul Patsku has put together in the last 4 or 5, and we're actually going to have Paul on the show next Sunday, and he's done some great work with Alex Braverman, and we actually had Alex on the show as well at one point. We always talk about it from the Canadian perspective. What's the Russian perspective on this series?
You'll get it in the movie. It is okay. In the docs. It is a yes. They may have lost, but they don't feel like they lost. They competed. Their goal was to show that they could play. And that they could play the game at the highest levels in a different way, and basically be the best. And that was the shocking part to Canada, that there frankly was a different and more elegant way to play this game that was about skill and that triumphed over toughness per se. And they changed the game of hockey as a result. And I think that was there. They don't feel they lost. And when you think back about it, they really didn't. I mean, what, Canada won by one goal with 1 minute to go. So that was that. And you'll see the Russian players. There are only 9 of them left, by the way. I think there's at least 25 Team Canada members still with us. But a lot of those guys, those Russian players, had tough lives afterwards. And you see the strain on them. And but they're just such great human beings, and great friendships were born of all that. And I just want to say, before you get to the other part of it, Patsku is an amazing guy.
Yeah, sure is.
The guy. He's the most brilliant archivist I've ever met. And Braverman knows everything there is to know about all this.
Yeah.
And before we leave it, I just want to say, Moses Neimer rocks. I wouldn't be in the world that I am in now professionally if it wasn't for the vision of that man to put different faces and different voices that are all rowing together to try to create this amazing country called Canada. So my hat's off to and great thanks to Moses Neimer.
Oh, absolutely. Moses is a pure genius, and we're privileged to be doing some work down at his vision down here. So thank you so much for saying that, Ravi. Last, really quickly, you may not be able to answer this. We don't want to spoil what's coming up. There's a controversial figure in when you talk about Team Canada 72, about the Summit Series, is Alan Eagleson. Do you deal with, without giving anything away, do you deal with his impact? Obviously, you probably have video footage of what happened in Game 8 when he basically they had to go pick him out of the stands because he gave the salute to whomever he gave the salute to. How do you deal with Alan Eagleson in the 4-part series?
Well, that was an enormously difficult question, and Nick DePonce and the team, we really wrestled with it. Journalistically, you couldn't leave him out. You start going down the path of what Eagleson did to the players and the fraud and all the rest of it, you've got yourself a different movie. So at some point, we had to tell this story. That's another story, and we don't hint at it too much, but we also don't glorify Eagleson. We have Eagleson there. And he's a voice, and I felt strongly, you know, as a journalist, that ignoring Eagleson just doesn't tell the whole story. But if you have to make choices about where a story goes, and how to conduct an interview, of course, right? And you know, we've talked about all that stuff, but it just didn't have a home, and not in the video real estate that we had here, which doesn't whitewash anything, I don't think. So
I'll leave it to viewers to decide whether we dealt with it the right way or not.
The series is Summit 72. It's on the CBC every Wednesday night. It started this Wednesday at 8 p.m. on Wednesday nights. It'll run for the next three Wednesday nights. And if I'm not mistaken, Ravi, it actually, on the third episode, is actually the actual 50th anniversary, September 28th. Yep. Did I get that right?
That's right. And it also is available per episode and then all together on CBC Gem, which is their streaming service, which is available for free.
Ravi, thank you so much for joining us. I hope we get the opportunity to meet someday and chat a little bit more.
It's absolutely my pleasure, and hats off to all of you guys. Great show. Thanks for the chance to talk about
it. Thanks. Ravi Beshwal. Guys, we got about 20 seconds left. They'll probably give us an extra 10 seconds. Really quickly, Naz, Alabama, are they going to end up number one?
No.
Okay.
Georgia is going to be number one. Lou,
Alabama, number one?
Always.
Okay. Well, the one thing we do know, Notre Dame ain't going to be number one this year. So we'll talk about that. It's been a not a great start to my beloved Fighting Irish. On that note, I will say thank you, Lou. I will say thank you, Naz. Naz, I always give you the last word.
Go Bills tomorrow night against Tennessee.
Absolutely. To our listeners, have a fantastic and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday morning. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.